Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, on the Leonard Lopate Show today, find out how too many antibiotics in animal feed could be harmful to your health and why the Food and Drug Administration is making a new effort to limit their use. Today at noon on 93.9 FM and AM 820 WNYC. Sloane Crosley is here. She's the publicist turned humor writer who wrote the New York Times bestseller, I Was Told There'd Be Cake. She's back with her new collection of essays called How Did You Get This Number? The first book was about generational disappointment. This one is about a more grown-up, sophisticated kind of disappointment, full of apartment envy, cheating boyfriends, and an anorexic kleptomaniac roommate. Sloane Crosley, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Apartments, furniture, and roommates factor into a lot of these stories. You moved to New York City right after college. How did you end up with an anorexic kleptomaniac roommate?
Yep. In the traditional way. I was supposed to move in with a friend of mine whose parents were intent on buying him an apartment, which was just, you know, sort of unheard of, like winning the lottery. And I was punished for my smugness and glee over this when they decided to just buy him the apartment. And I was sort of left adrift. So I went on Craigslist, of course, the lovely internet, and found a woman who I call Nell.
And listeners, we thought we would pull out this little aspect of Sloane's story to get your stories, your first apartment in New York, the funky setups, the funky roommates, the lucky breaks. Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, with the stories worth telling of your first apartment in New York, 212-433-9692, or post your story to our show page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. I'll spare you the story about how my first landlord in New York stole my air conditioner.
Another day. Now would be a bad time for that.
But friend of the show, Jeff Jarvis, already wrote on our Facebook page on this. My neighbor across the walls played only scales on the piano for a year. Drove me nuts. I yearned for chopsticks. Dan on Facebook wrote that his first apartment was a Tribeca loft where the four roommates had monthly shows of our work and other artists. There was a new roommate every month, and he's had around 40 roommates in New York City so far. So he wrote, one roommate pretended he was still living there by keeping his light on and some of his stuff, but actually skipped town, owing me hundreds of dollars. And Sloane, your mouth is wide. Even your mouth is wide open at that
one. That's impressive.
So you tried to get out of your anorexic kleptomaniac roommate situation and into an artist loft in the building on the Bowery that was once the most infamous brothel in New York, McGurk's Suicide Hall, mm-hmm. as it's known. Tell us about that.
Well, while my roommate was away, this opportunity came for another living space. And I thought, no, I can't abandon her. And then I was told that it was 2,500 square feet. And suddenly my sort of morality dial changed a little bit. And I went to look at it. And before I went, I Googled the address because I thought, you know, why not? Maybe I'll find some sort of, you know, model's plea for lost headshots or something ideal like that. And instead, I found tons of hits online because it used to be the worst condition brothel on the Bowery, and no less than 9 prostitutes killed themselves there.
Mm. And you say that in imagining living at the artist loft on the Bowery, you could see yourself as one of those women who, not one of those women,
well,
but one of these other women who doesn't blow dry their hair and has transcended brushes. What women are those?
I think the woman who actually lived there, who I went to see, had this amazing sort of removed, disaffected cool that I think is certainly coveted or at least just faked by a lot of people downtown. And I kind of wanted to be one of them. I mean, maybe a little more plugged into reality and not so put out by, you know, having to move from point A to point B every day as she seemed to be. But I kind of wanted to be like that.
Do you think it's fair to say that one's apartment in New York does a lot to determine how you think of yourself, especially for young people first trying to find their way here?
I think it does. I think the neighborhood primarily is a lot of how you define yourself because you're leaving the apartment presumably quite a bit, partially because you have a life and partially because it's probably pretty confining. And then after that, you know, your roommates become your fake family, and, you know, it's it's something everyone has a sort of horror story about it. And so, you know, when you go outside New York, people will say, well, then why do you live there? And you think, well, that's part of the – it's a horror story you kind of adore.
So, listeners, we want to know your horror stories that you kind of adore. 212-433-WNYC on your first apartment in New York. The funky setups, the funky roommates, the lucky breaks. Too bad nobody bought you an apartment when you were going out with their parent, their kid. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Sloane Crosley, author of the book, How Did You Get This Number? Tanya in Hazlitt, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I have to say that my first apartment wasn't bad. I was living with my sister. We were living in Brooklyn off Washington Park, and when the movie She's Gotta Have It came out, I realized that, hey, that's right across the street from my apartment, the park that they sat in. However, we moved from Rhode Island. We knew nothing about gas stoves. We were used to electric.
Oh, no.
We didn't know how to turn it down. We cooked everything on high. We also, unfortunately, ruined the tub because I didn't know about those plugs that are under the sink. And we just used the rubber stopper, and one day we must have knocked it off of the stand, the plug that was under the sink. So we saw that the tub was stopped up, and we kept trying to unstop it. We finally just kept pouring in Drano, and by the time we called the landlord and the plumber came in, the enamel was stripped off the tub.
Oh, my. So they don't have – I mean, our listeners are thinking, you rube from Rhode Island.
So. Yeah, I mean, we were like, hey, we're in Brooklyn. This is cool. My sister was living there, said, come on. And, I mean, I loved Brooklyn. I loved the apartment, but – I felt bad for the guy afterwards, but as the plumber came in, we're going, we don't know what's wrong with the tub. He came in, he looked under the sink, he moved the whatever that stopper thing is for the tub, and all the water drained out. We had never seen such a thing.
Todd, thank you for this story. Jackie on our comments page says, at my second apartment in New York, which I found on Craigslist, I ended up living with a nice girl who attempted to kill herself in her lingerie twice in a week. She disappeared for a few weeks after that, probably to the psych ward. When she returned, I told her I had to leave to go live with my boyfriend in a new amazing apartment we had found, which was a lie. I actually moved back in with some old friends until I found a studio just for me.
She tried to kill herself in her lingerie. She sounds like she would have fit in very well in the brothel.
Yeah, but maybe the moral of that story is that somebody's intense psychological distress becomes the story of my inconvenient roommate.
Well, it also becomes your problem when you're living in such a, you know, we don't live in, you know, places with wings generally. Excuse me.
Matt in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hi. My first apartment after I moved out of the dorms of NYU was rooming with a couple of guys, including one of whom who was just nutty as a bed bug. Among his many quirks, he had a pathological hatred for plastic bags. He was so cheap that he got one of his friends who worked at, I think it was Bellevue Hospital, to bring him hospital food so that he wouldn't have to pay for food. And then he also had a nasty habit of basically making every TV show, changing its name to something profane. But the long story short is, we finally got a revenge. One day we went over to the deli across the street that didn't like my roommate anyways, asked them for a whole ton of plastic bags. We stripped his bed, put plastic bags underneath the bed sheet, and then watched him flip out when he got home.
So it's like a summer camp prank.
Basically.
Was his plastic bag thing environmental?
No, it was just he hated plastic bags.
Matt, thank you for your call. Sloane, from the essay in your book called Off the Back of the Truck, some people have coke guys. You had an upholstery guy. Who's Daryl?
Daryl, should be noted, is not his real name, considering what he does in the essay, was my sort of furniture fence. I was shopping for furniture I couldn't afford for my new apartment after I had escaped the closet anorexic open kleptomaniac roommate. And he sort of appeared in this very fancy store and asked me if he wanted me to call him or wanted him to call me should the furniture ever go on sale. But it was a store where furniture never went on sale, which was quite confusing. But I gave him my phone number anyway, and thus started about a year of him basically selling me pieces of furniture in cash. And that's hence the title, Off the Back of a Truck.
And you start this relationship with Daryl at the same time that you start a romantic relationship with a guy who turns out to be a two-timing jerk. So in the end, you end up with really good furniture and no boyfriend.
Really good furniture.
But a surprisingly close friendship with the furniture guy. Is there something in that story that explains why you love New York?
I think there's certainly an unexpected twist, I think, or hopefully unexpected. I think, you know, when we first meet Daryl, I had a blast kind of describing his very imposing sausage-like physicality. And meanwhile, there's sort of a somewhat dreamy literary boy on the other hand, and you think you know who they are, and they just kind of switch. One becomes appealing in a way that's unexpected. One becomes repulsive in a way that's unexpected.
Sausage-like, huh? Patty or, never mind, Cassius and
Bed-Stuy. Link, link-like, you know, limbs.
Cassius and Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello, folks. How you doing?
All right.
My first long-time roommate situation was here in Brooklyn in Borum Hill. And this was back in the days when you would find roommates through the back of the Village Voice. He was like a porn addict. He would rent porn on videotape, and he had like two tape decks set up in his room, and he would make like greatest hits collections from all the porn he was renting. And then like between our two bedrooms, there used to be a closet that he had ripped out, so like the wall wasn't complete, so I would have to hear the audio of all this. But he also let me live there about 7 or 8 months rent free when he got a really good job.
So, we're getting porn, we're getting suicide and lingerie.
And the hospital food. I feel like all these people have all these offerings.
From Bellevue. Cassius, thank you for your call. So can you top these stories in your book?
Well, I actually don't think some of them are so bad. I mean, I never had really the compulsion to short sheet my roommate's bed with plastic, although, you know, maybe that would have been a good idea at the time. I did pretend, in the essay, I do pretend that it's a fake museum exhibit at one point and try to make a little plaque for it while she's not around, just because I was bored and feeling wily. But, you know, I think it's more the sense of being trapped. And then that's, you asked me, you know, how is it like New York? I think that sense of something that's voluntary and yet you're being trapped in it. And so you feel like every move they make is somehow a personal affront. And it could be something that's very small, such as, you know, Jell-O in a cup, or something that is very big, such as your roommate actually trying to kill themselves. But because it's all on the same sort of, ugh, my crazy roommate story spectrum, like, you're right. You actually get someone's deep emotional turmoil becomes almost a tick, which is unfortunate.
Sloane Crosley's new book, I Was Told There'd Be Cake. The new book is How Did You Get This Number? Many of you know I Was Told There'd Be Cake, her previous one. You live in New York City. You're associate director of publicity at Vintage Anchor Books as your day job. But you had this bestseller, I Was Told There'd Be Cake, which I gather is now in development as a series on HBO, is that right?
It is. I'm writing the pilot as we speak. Well, not, that would be rude, but when I go home.
And what's it going to be like?
I think, you know, it could die on the vine at any minute, but I think the idea is a little bit closer to Larry David and a little bit further away from any sort of, you know, rosy-hued drinks.
The most aggressive multitasking I've ever had by a guest, a couple of people, was that they were reading the paper while doing the interview. Two guests.
Reading the paper while doing the interview? Were they reading from the paper?
No, they were.
That's impressive.
Like between questions, you know, this is people who are so high-paced that their notion of downtime was those seconds while I was in transition between their answer and taking the next call, and they were reading the paper. But nobody's ever tried to actually write a book
while doing it.
While doing the interview.
I once did an interview while someone asked me, someone insisted I play ping pong while doing the interview. So that's a hand-eye challenge.
That's good. That was for television, I presume.
Yeah.
All right. And you have an event today, 12:30 this afternoon at Bryant Park's Word for Word series on the Funny Writers Panel. Again, that event takes place at the Bryant Park Reading Room, 42nd Street, between Fifth Avenue and Sixth Avenue. That's indoors or outdoors?
It's outdoors unless it rains.
So the Bryant Park Reading Room is outdoors,
yes,
in the park. Part of the Funny Writers panel in the Word for Word series, Sloane Crosley, her new book, How Did You Get This Number? 5-second version. What's the title refer to?
The title refers to Disappointment Redux.
I don't know.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having
me. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.